Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. We have a UFC off week coming up on the back end of UFC Vegas 113 and PFL Road to Dubai, both of which happened this past weekend out there in Dubai. Usman Nurmagomedov once again adding to his undefeated record over there in PFL, a very slick submission of Alfie Davis to defend that lightweight championship. And now just one fight left on Usman Nurmagomedov's contract. What is going to happen with that? Very interested to see if PFL goes above and beyond to try to retain his services, or if maybe we see a much anticipated move to the UFC lightweight division happen, which would be very exciting. But definitely if you're PFL trying to hang on to that guy. And then on the UFC side of things, Mario Bautista silences the trash talking, the very confident Vinicius Oliveira in the UFC Vegas 113 headliner. Brilliant stuff. A brilliant submission on his end too. Very slick to rebound from his loss to Umar Nurmagomedov that snapped his 8-fight winning streak. Bautista putting himself back in the conversation of sorts at bantamweight, which is an always compelling weight class. And that kind of sets up some time to talk about some different things here on the Bonfire. As I said, no fights this weekend for the UFC. Valentine's Day weekend, they're taking off, and then they'll resume the end of this month heading to Houston. And then we go into the March schedule, starting off with UFC 326, Max Holloway versus Charles Oliveira for that BMF title. But today I want to have a conversation about every weight class in the UFC, which is best, which is worst. We're going to do the first ever Bonfire weight class power rankings here. Dean Thomas, UFC commentator and coach, going to join me to do so and just see what is really the lay of the land. What's the best weight class? Are we ragging too hard on some of the ones that are quote unquote worst? Definitely had this idea inspired by the heavyweight fights that we've seen in recent weeks, particularly that Rizvan Khouniev versus Jailton Almeida fight, once again sparking questions about, is heavyweight the worst weight class in the UFC? Is it? Maybe not. I don't know. We will see where it fits on the rankings. A quick teaser there, but I thought this was a fun exercise here. Allows us to go over a lot of different talking points, a lot of different fighters, and just kind of address the state of things all across the board with the UFC as we have this off week. So that is what's to come here on the Bonfire. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, follow, anything you can do to show support. Share it with a friend, means a lot. We are trying our best to grow this program and get it in front of as many eyeballs as possible as we try to expand things here in 2026. So appreciate everyone out there's viewers and listening through the intro here. I will be right back on the other side of the break with Dean Thomas. Back here on the Bonfire with Dean Thomas, one of our favorites. Dean, how are we doing, man?
I'm good, man. I am good. I'm on the East Coast, but luckily on the south side of the East Coast right now, so I'm not dealing with the frigid temperatures like you are.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully this comes to an end soon. I'm just waiting for spring. It was very sunny today, but it was cold as hell. So I think that's the way it be. But perfect time to kind of sit here and chill out a little bit. Not to, you know, speak too much of the weather, but no UFC this weekend. So we get a rare off week. The company doing kind to everyone who's in a relationship. No event on Valentine's Day night.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. No event on Valentine's. Like, that's always a good time to watch some beatdowns, right, with your significant other. But I guess they're giving everybody a break and saying, you know what, spend some quality time with your significant other and just coddle them, as opposed to, like, you know, watching some people getting beat down.
Yeah, we got a long stretch of events after this one, so enjoy the off week for anyone out there. Well,
I got to say, man, there is a long stretch and I'm working almost every one of them, so I'm blessed.
Yeah, it's how's it been so far with the new Paramount era? We saw you on the desk for 324, obviously, or I believe 325 from the studio too, and they're kind of doing some remote stuff as opposed to sending people everywhere. But is it mostly going to be in the desk in Las Vegas for you?
Yeah, I think so. And I got to say, I am so happy with what Paramount is doing. I mean, there were obviously questions about what we thought Paramount would do with the, you know, with this burden of carrying the UFC. But, you know, I've been at the Paramount offices in Fort Lauderdale and been working closely with them so far. And they are so excited to be carrying the UFC. And I think that's probably the biggest difference between Paramount and ESPN, is that when I was at ESPN, you could kind of feel that UFC was like fourth on their priority list. It was NFL. It was whatever college game was big at the time. It was NBA. And then somewhere in there was UFC. And they did great with it. Like, the people who worked with ESPN and UFC, they worked great with it. But you could always feel that it was kind of fourth. But at Paramount, you could feel that they're like, hey, listen, we with y'all. We going to put y'all a priority. And they've been doing a great job with it so far. So I'm just happy that Paramount has taken over and done such a great job with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is your roles going to change at all, or is it going to be a lot of desk work? We obviously saw you on 325 having to do the like coaches thing, but it was beamed in. So it was a little bit different for you, I imagine, than being there cage side. But like any other new responsibilities or anything popping up for you?
Well, I do know that Paramount is experimenting with some new stuff. I don't know exactly what that is just yet, but I've been working with them on being on board with whatever they're trying to do. So hopefully I get some new roles. I love to work. You know me, man. I get lonely when I'm not working. So I love to work, and hopefully it works out. But as for right now, just desk work and obviously my coaching role, and that keeps me pretty busy. But I got a lot of fighters I'm working with too, with big fights coming up. Not a lot, but some big fights coming up. So
yeah, that's awesome. Was the coaches thing tricky, doing it like beamed in with the slight delay and everything? I mean, Vegas to Australia, I understand technology is gonna have its minor hiccups. It wasn't that bad, but I imagine it was a little trickier for you.
Oh, it was very tricky, because just the reverb and the echoes and things like that, and not knowing when. So, but I mean, they really wanted to experiment with this, and I wanted to as well. Like, we wanted to see if we could make this work. I'm hoping it didn't sound too bad, but we made it work, and I want to try it again, because I would, despite me loving to travel, I would love to be able to do it from Vegas.
Yeah. Sounded fine. I mean, it was just like maybe half a beat delayed as opposed to what it would be normally, but we're used to being it seamless, and I'm sure they'll get it figured out. So nothing to fret about. But no, Dean, the reason we had to have you on today is we're going to do our first ever UFC power rankings here on the Bonfire, and kind of just assess the lay of the land, because I think this idea came to my mind once again, everyone just completely crapping on the heavyweight division after Jailton Almeida versus Ruslan Kuniev this past weekend, UFC Vegas 113. And it's just like, you know, how is Jailton Almeida like a established top five guy? Like, is this the best we can do in this weight class? So I'm like, is this really the worst weight class? And asked you to rank them, and I want to rank them, and we'll compare our lists. It was an interesting experiment for me, I thought.
Well, I didn't get online and read. I try to stay away from all the nonsense, so I didn't read the nonsense. But as I was watching the fight, you know, and I'm very critical, even more so critical of my own athletes. But part of it is they just don't realize what they have when they have it. They don't realize what it looks like, especially when they're in the middle of a fight. Because I'm sure, like, Jailton Almeida and Kuniev, I'm watching the fight, and in the middle of that fight, I'm thinking they're doing better than they actually are, right? They're thinking they're in this all-out war. And you could tell, because at the end of the fight, they're pointing to the center. And I think in their head, it looks like one thing, but that's not what it is, right? They just don't realize what it is in real time. And when he goes back and watches it, he going to think to himself, oh, I thought we was killing it, but you wasn't exactly killing it.
No, definitely not. And I did enjoy this, actually, kind of going through and looking all through all these weight classes. Like, a few notes I took here, Dean, and I sent you like a bit of an open criteria as far as to how we want to rank it. Obviously, you can, you know, go with your gut and what feels right. But I also said, you know, consider the strength overall of the weight class, the quality of the fights we get from that weight class, who's the champion in that division. Like, do they rise up the level of things overall just because they're so great? What kind of storylines does that division offer? If we had to make as many big fights as possible right now, how many are available to you? And then just kind of like from the bottom up, does this division have, you know, good prospects, a good foothold of what it can be going forward and over the next couple of years here? So those were kind of a few things. And then I went through all the weight classes here. And before we get into our rankings, I wanted to talk to you about stuff that centers a lot around age, in my opinion, and looking at the age of some of these fighters. So I calculated all 176 ranked fighters. So 15 in each division and then one champion. So 16 from the 11 weight classes. The average age, Dean, of all the ranked fighters in the UFC is exactly 33 years old. Wow. I took it a step further and wanted to see what's the average age of the top five plus the champion in each division. Came out the exact same, 33 years old. So I found that was interesting. There is two ranked fighters out of 176 that are below 25 years of age, 25 or younger, which is, I don't know what to make to that, if that's bad or good. Those two are Kevin Vallejos and Joshua Van. There's six fighters who are 40 or older across those 176. Oldest fighter currently ranked is Jan Blachowicz, 42 years old at light heavyweight. So that just made me think, like, what is the prime of an MMA fighter? You know, we always say it's a young man's sport. It's a young man's sport. You think the 20-year-olds are thriving, but you look through the rankings, man. It's mostly, I would say, 30 to 34-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that is when their prime is. Like, the peak of a good fighter is about that. Somewhere just above, like, in, like, 30 and... Yeah, like 30 to 34 is like, and I always say this, man, is it like their window, like every fighter's like prime years, it's about 5 years long, 3 to 5 years. The problem is they don't know when it is, right. You know, but I think the good fighters, their prime years are about 30 to 34, maybe 35, their prime, and getting to it, they feel like they're pretty good, but the problem is they're not fighting the greatest competition, so they can't really tell. They're just that good, and they're beating those guys up until they're about 30. But when you're about 30, I think that's when you pretty much hit your maturity in terms of mentally. You hit your maturity, you understand what's in front of you at that time, you know what the consequences are, and you're taking fighting more seriously at that point. Prior to that, you're kicking a lot of butt, but you're not as good as you are going to be when you're about 30. But physically, yeah, you might feel it, but mentally you're just not there yet. And then after about 34, 35, 36, then you start losing some testosterone and you start dabbling in other things, and you know, your fame starts to get in the way, and more clinger owners hang on to you and start pulling your energy into different places. But from 30 to 34, when you can kind of zone in, is about the age. So this makes sense to me that the top five is about 33 years old. It makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Just cause yeah, you always think the 20-year-olds would be dominating the sport, but
just look better earlier because they're so physical and they're so fast and they're so strong and they're kicking butt easier but mentally they're just not mature enough to be at that high level fighting with so many distractions and so much at stake. They're not mature enough for that.
Yeah, and it's hard too. I mean, you know, I didn't calculate the average number of fights it takes to, say, challenge for a UFC title, right? Like the first time challengers, but say it's 8 to 10, like 8 to 10 UFC fights before you get your first opportunity. You know, if you get in there at 25 and you have to fight 10 times, that's twice a year, 5 years about there. So that brings you to 30, right? So like, even if you're getting into the UFC and you're early to mid 20s, by the time you get 10, 12 fights in and really build yourself up as a contender, you know, that's maybe one loss in there, two would probably set you back even further. You know, it can take a lot of years. So I guess by the time you actually build a championship portfolio and someone like Alexander Volkanovski get in 13 straight title fights, boom, you're 36, 37 years old, just like that.
Well, Alex Bejeda is kind of a special case because he got it so fast, right?
Sure. He's
a special case. He's an outlier. And a lot of people will say, well, look at Alex Bejeda. He did it without that many fights. Well, first off, like, he was mature when he got in. Like, he was a little older. That's one.
So, and he got his timeline expedited by the Izzy rivalry.
He got his timeline expedited. And he also faced a lot of kickboxers coming from a kickboxing background. So there were a lot of things that worked in his favor that allowed him to not have that 10 fights before he was able to fight for a championship. He came in with a tremendous amount of kickboxing experience. Then he fought a bunch of kickboxers and he was old enough, you know? So there were a lot of things that worked in his favor that allowed him to do it. So if he is the outlier, there were still some favorable circumstances that allowed him to do it without like having 10 UFC fights. So,
yep. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I mean, does it surprise you the number of young fighters, though, that have only snuck in there, like just having two in Vallejos and Van? And Van, again, an unusual circumstance, like fought five times in a year, essentially, you know, had some things break his way in terms of just needing the champion being so dominant that his timeline got expedited a bit. But, man, I look at this, you see only 24 guys. I mean, if I'm Jon Jones, I'm feeling very comfortable about my record for youngest UFC champion, probably. Never
been oh broken. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's gonna be very difficult to duplicate that, to do that again. I can't foresee like a young fighter coming in and being able to be a UFC champion at 21 22 years old. It's gonna be so difficult to do that. And when John did it, like, just timing is everything. Like, Joshua Van was able to do, what is he, 24?
Yeah,
and Joshua Van was able to do it, but again, like, the circumstances around which he did it are so rare. It's so rare that he was ranked 15th and was able to fight Brandon Royval. It was something like that. And then for him to win that fight, and it came down to the last minute of that fight, which actually won him that fight. And then the circumstances in which he got the title shot, and then Pantoja, like, the circumstances are so off the wall rare. And that's why when Joshua Van celebrates being champion, I'm like, please celebrate being champion, because to have those circumstances happen for you like that is extremely rare, and it won't happen again to many guys. So celebrate it if you can get an opportunity to win a championship the way you do. I don't care how you do it. If you can do it, you celebrate it.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Well, that was fascinating to go through all that, and I'm glad I did the work. And yeah, I feel like we need to maybe have a greater conversation about what defines a prime in MMA, because clearly I think these guys have a little more length in the tooth than maybe we perceived they would, you know, earlier on in the game, and just thinking it was going to be 20-year-old guys running shop.
Well, and the reason why we think that is because the fall is so precipitous when they're out of it. Because it goes up, and then when it drops, it's so fast. And that's why I always, and Kamaru Usman just yelled at me the other day, pulled me off to the side, yelling at me, how dare you think I'm going to lose? but it's because when they do drop off, it's really fast. It's not like a gradual drop off, especially when you're at that height, because you're fighting the next best guys. Like, if you can go back and say, all right, you know what, give me some contender series guys, then you might be able to slow down that fall. But it just happens so fast. That's why when a guy is 36 or 37 and then he can't win another fight again, we're like, wow, this is the end. Like, was he really in his prime? He was in his prime. It's just when it falls so fast that you don't recognize that you're actually in your prime up until you lose it. Like, it's snatched away from you.
It depends when you start. I mean, look at someone like Rory McDonald. You know, he had his first pro fight at 16, and he's basically, you know, done by 31, 32. So completely depends on that and all the damage and stuff too. So very, very interesting to just kind of examine. And I guess age only matters unless you're Andrei Arlovsky, because that guy apparently is superhuman and will win fights until we're all old and dead, and he'll outlive us all and outfight us all. Crazy.
Yeah,
you saw him beat Ben Rothwell.
Yeah, just saw he just won another fight just recently. It's crazy to think about that. So, like, you know, he just beat Ben Rothwell, then he beat up some kids at the tarmac and
Jack Doherty. It's crazy, man. Like, I remember being in high school and we were saying Andrei Arlovsky was washed and should retire, like, after he's getting knocked out by Fedor. The dude's lived like five lives since then. It's absolutely
I really don't know how he's been able to sustain that and just keep reinventing himself, and just the motivation, like, to have the motivation to keep coming back to fight in front of other people is, again, these rare cases. And we shouldn't look at these as like the standard. We can't look at that as the standard. No, it's dangerous to look at that as the standard.
No, definitely do not try to repeat that. He is one of a kind, no doubt. Yeah. Ageless wonder. All right, Dean, let's get into these rankings here. Our power rankings of the weight classes in the UFC. Ooh, what do we want? Do you want to lead it off here? I have a feeling the bottom is going to be a little bit similar, but I'm actually curious in what direction that you went. So who did you have?
So
it's your, I guess, number 11 at the bottom of your list for the power rankings.
At the bottom?
Yeah.
So the number 11, the worst division? Or we're going to start there. All right. Yeah. So I got to be honest with you. As I'm going through my phone, I'm looking for my notes. I'm like, yo, did I accidentally delete it? But it's okay because I have it memorized. It's all right. Okay. It's quite all right. The division, and I don't want to call it the worst, but I'm going to say the division that needs the most help is female bantamweight. I'm going with female bantamweight, 135 pounds.
I have the same.
Do you really? Yeah. And I'm going there because whatever hope and light that they had with the fight between Amanda and Kayla Harrison, which could have really done tremendous for that division. Well, it could have shined a big light on that division. I don't know what the likelihood of that fight is of happening and when it's going to happen, but without them two, it looks really grim. So I have to put that one at the bottom.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was my big question about this division is just when is Kayla Harrison going to return? Is she going to return? I believe in my heart and heart she's going to, you know, try her best to get in there, but neck issues are obviously extremely complicated, so you would never want to rush something like that. But without that fight, man, it is scary. I mean, I was looking through this division, the age-wise, the only person ranked who's in their 20s is Luana Santos, who is 25 years old. She is ranked number 15. But if Amanda was to be put back in the rankings right now, Miss Luana Santos would be the first person bumped out. So she would not have that ranking anymore. So it would be all people in their 30s, all women in their 30s. Just not a ton to get excited about there. You know, potential big fights I wrote down, obviously Harrison versus Nunes, maybe Harrison versus Shevchenko if she came back up, Nunes versus Shevchenko.
But even that, like we're
asking. These are fights outside the division.
That's what I'm saying. Even that, to make the division strong, we're asking a flyweight to move up.
I know. It's not great, and I don't know what to say about it. I mean, not a serious number of fights in this weight class last year, just – yeah, Misha Tate is still hanging on to number 13 ranking at, you know, 39 years old. So it's just, yeah, there hasn't been a lot of forward movement, and I don't know how that changes. I mean, are you seeing an intrigue in women coming into the gym wanting to become professional fighters? Are we losing that? Like, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this.
It's tough to say. It is tough to say. I do think that, and that was, I think, Ronda's biggest contribution to the sport, was that she allowed women to feel like they could become fighters. Is she really opened up the doors for that, and women were like, oh, I want to be like Ronda. Even today, when you ask a lot of women what their main motivation for fighting was, it was Ronda. Like, oh, I saw Ronda do it, and I wanted to do it. And now I think we've lost that. We've lost that role model of who women can aspire to be like. And we just don't have that right now. And so I think that has slowed the progress of women MMA. There's just no real role model. And then also too, with the influx, like most women are training jiu-jitsu and they don't want to get hit. So I think that too, while I think the explosion of women in jiu-jitsu is high or even increasing, they just don't want to get hit. And then there's no female fighters that they want to aspire to be. So I think that has kind of punched women's MMA in the face.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of the other women's divisions, so don't need to harp on it too much. But yeah, I don't even know if I can blame the UFC for this kind of being in the state. Like, it's not like there's all these amazing women out there that they're just not signing or are signed to another organization and they just can't get them in, you know. Like, I'm not seeing it as a whole. Someone pops up here and there, but we'll see if that changes. Were you gonna say something?
No, I was just gonna say hopefully. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hopefully, but in terms of like that division, plus that division is a little tricky too, because there's not a lot of women at that size regardless.
Exactly.
So like now we're dealing with other hurdles that we have to jump over in order to kind of raise up that division. There's just not a lot of women at that size, you know, walking around at, you know, 150 pounds in the gym, like, yo, I want to fight. So I'll fight at bantamweight. You know, it's just, you know, most of them are a little smaller anyway.
Yeah. And it sucks because I would probably not have had this in the spot if Amanda and Kayla fought and, you know, everything worked out as planned. But right now it's just, it's the uncertainty. What, I mean, you're obviously in Amanda's camp. Like, what's her feeling? Like, she's said all the right things since this has been canceled and seemed like her head is in a good place. But I don't know, like, when you're in training with no idea exactly what's going to happen, I'm sure it can get tough on some days.
Well, she allowed herself to stay busy. Like, she still did fight week in Vegas, even though the fight didn't happen, and she stayed out there to help Priscilla Cachuera. So she stayed in the grind. She still wants to be a part of the sport. It's not like she wants to get away. So she wanted to be a part of it. And I thought that that was extremely important for her and very helpful too, to still go through that fight week process, because like, that's the stuff no one likes to do. Yeah. So like, for her to go back and do that, even though she wasn't fighting, but just to have that experience is going to carry a long way, so that, you know, when this fight does get made, she'll have been through that experience at least within the year, right? Because like, it's been a couple years since she's been through that, so that's going to be helpful for her mentally going into a fight.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, let's move on. At number 10, who do you have?
Men's heavyweight.
Men's heavyweight. I went that low. I was wondering where it was going to fall on your list. I had it a little bit higher, but give me your explanation. Why is men's heavyweight so close to the bottom of your list here?
I just think that, and we spoke about it earlier, you know, that fight was pretty indicative of what we're dealing with men's heavyweight. And it just, there's just really not a lot of depth. And then when you talk about at the top, where it could be so bright with Tom Aspinall, he's out with an eye injury and he's got just such a horrible reputation right now. Like, the fans have just kind of just dismissed him. And then there's John Jones, who's like now flirting with the idea of not fighting again. And it just looks really grim at times. Like, the men's heavyweight, there's no depth, there's no superstars except for the ones that are injured or not, or have no real future. We don't see a future in them fighting often. It's just, I don't know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Average age of this weight class, 33 and a half years old, which isn't too, you know, isn't even
not bad for heavyweight.
No, it's not terrible, but that's basically skewed by one guy, Tolleson Teixeira, being 26 years old at, you know, number 11 there, I think. And, you know, seeing what we saw against Tai Tuivasa, by the way, Tai Tuivasa is still ranked, 6 losses in a row. He is number 15 still. So that goes to show where this weight class is at. But yeah, like, Tolleson Teixeira is the youngest guy. It's not like you saw flashes there where you're like, okay, he's going to be a title threat in a couple of years. Just need to give him some time to grow.
I was just going to say that. Tolleson Teixeira, you know, and the Tai Tuivasa fight, also indicative of what we're dealing with men's heavyweight. And, you know, we use this excuse, all our best heavyweights in the States, you know, they play football. I don't necessarily know if that's true. I just think big guys don't like to fight. I don't necessarily assume that when they're athletic, they want to play another sport. I just think they just don't like to fight. Like, they're comfortable being big and intimidating people. So they don't feel the need to learn how to fight. And then when they're already big and can intimidate people, they don't want to challenge themselves against another big guy. They're okay with just being big and intimidating people. So I definitely think that the heavyweight division is really lacking right now, and I'm not sure when that might change.
Yeah, I don't know how it changes. I mean, I literally had in my notes here, like, is this division dead? How do you revive it? And I don't know, like, obviously the big thing out there, like, Gable Steveson is a prospect that gets us all excited. I don't know if he can be like a savior of sort, but there is other guys out there. I mean, Hunter Campbell said in his antitrust testimony a few days ago that the UFC tried to sign Rico Verhoeven for UFC 324 against Derek Lewis. That didn't pan out. You know, Francis Ngannou is still out there somewhere if you really want to, but like, there's guys you could bring in. I don't know if it's a game changer, but I did have my notes here. Like, you know, is Gable Steveson capable of turning this around on his own? And I might be putting too much of a burden on the young man.
Well, if there's any two men right now that I would say might have the opportunity to turn it around, I would say Gable Steveson and Josh Hokett.
Oh God.
I know, right? That's my point. But, and I say this because what I like, I find him to be as, you know, he is what he is. He says what he says. He does what he does. But he can fight.
Sure. That's what I like, keep hearing. I like, it's getting overshadowed by the antics.
Yes, I like his skill set. He moves his feet well. He transitions well. He goes up and down well. And for a heavyweight, he's got a nightmare style for a heavyweight. So I just think his character, it's just hard to sustain for too long. I wish he would have pulled it back. Like, I wish he had started slower and then maybe built up to that. But hard to maintain that character, but he can fight. So let's keep him running. Let's keep him moving. Maybe he can save the heavyweight division. Maybe he can shine some light on that heavyweight division because, man, if not him and if they don't sign Gable Stevenson, then I don't know what we're going to do because Derek Lewis ain't going to do it.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's rough. Like, you look at these rankings. I mean, it's not inspiring. Jailton Almeida still hanging on to that ranking. You know, Sergey Pavlovich, where have you gone? Alexander Volkov is obviously solid, but he's, you know, 38 years old almost now. And the big question is, as you alluded to earlier, like, Tom Aspinall is amazing, and I think the excitement we had for him and maybe John patched up these issues for a long time. If Tom Aspinall, worst case scenario, which I don't think is completely out of the realm of possibility, that this man never fights again because it's that bad, these eye issues, like,
really,
that would be an even more serious hit. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, speak exactly for him. I think there's still work to be done and optimism, but like, I don't think you can say that is 100% off the table. I think it is somewhere on the table where Tom asked, it could be that bad for Tom. And that's very scary. And man, if he's gone, woof. It's an even bigger hit.
Then I guess we do have to rely on Cyril Gahn to carry the division. And he's not the type of guy that you're looking at. Like, oh man, it's heavyweight champ, man. Let's rally behind him. I think it's just the division just really needs an injection of life.
Yeah, and I don't know where that comes from. I mean, obviously, maybe you got to sweeten the pot even more for these guys signing some heavyweights and just hope they kind of pan out. But even then, like, I put, you know, potential big fights, Aspinall versus Gone 2 would obviously be, you know, get that resolved and has a story behind it. Aspinall versus Pereira, if we can get that to happen. And then Jones versus Pereira I had in my notes, but these are all, you know, kind of one-off fights. These aren't sustainable things. It's not like John or Alex Pereira are looking at, you know, long heavyweight title reigns if they go up there, or even fighting for a belt. So even the stuff we have is not, it's just patchwork again.
Yeah, no depth at all within that division. Just, whew. Yeah.
You think John Jones has come to terms with, you know, reality, not going to get a spot on the White House card? He's saying, I think I'm done. You know, I don't want to risk it. I talked to other fighters who can't remember their birthday, and I don't want to be that guy while I still have my, you know, functions and all that stuff.
It's hard to say. If he doesn't get on the White House card, it's pretty safe to say he probably never fight again. Yeah. I think he might come back for something like that just to say that he did it. I mean, when you're John Jones and you've had two Hall of Fame, independent Hall of Fame type careers, like, it's hard to get up again because you've done everything. You've beaten everybody. You're the consensus goat to everybody. So why do you get up? The only thing that would really kind of get you up is to say, hey, I fought on the White House lawn. Like, not many people will be able to say that. That's something that he could put on his resume. And if that doesn't happen, then why else would he want to come back? I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I agree. We just passed this past weekend the 6-year anniversary of his fight versus Dominic Reyes, February 2020. And he's fought twice since then, you know, once against Gone, once against Stipe Miocic. I mean, I say this respectfully, but John Jones has basically been retired for the better part of a decade at this point. I mean, that's just what it is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Like, I didn't even realize it was 6 years since he fought. Like, time flies so fast. That's why I'm so gray now, man. Every day I get more and more gray and don't even realize it. Damn, 6 years since the Dominic Reyes fight.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. I think we were probably going to spend the most time at the bottom half and the top half of this list, and obviously heavyweight's a big thing to revolve around here. I had heavyweight at 9, so mm-hmm. I gave it slightly more love than you. So at my 10, I had strawweight, women's strawweight, which was, you know, it's not very inspiring either. Only a couple 20-ish year olds in the rankings, Denise Gomez and Fatima Klein, who are both, you know, outside of the top 10 there, hanging around 15. The average age of this division, 32.8 years old. The biggest storyline I had written down is like, will Zhang Weili return to this division? And again, if the biggest storyline is like, will a fighter who's not in this division be coming back? I think you're in for a bit of a rough spot there. And yeah, it's tricky. Big fights I wrote down, you know, Dern versus Weili, maybe Dern versus Suarez, but Suarez has to get through Lupi Godinez. I know our girl Jillian Robertson is, you know, hanging around in that weight class and wants to make some noise, but still some work to do as well. So strawweight is not great either, in my opinion.
Yeah, I had that at nine.
Okay.
Where are we at on this?
Yeah, so that was my 10. Yeah, heavyweight was my nine. So if you if you went with heavyweight at 10 and strawweight is your nine, it's just a small flip there between our two.
Actually, no wait. I had this at my eight. I had it at my eight.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, we'll just hit on now. I mean, any other thoughts on strawweight?
Yeah, I just that division is definitely slim, but I do think with fighters like Fatima Klein is probably the future of the division. Like, I think she should become champion at some point. I think, you know, she's going to go on a run eventually, and then the opportunity should come. I think she has a really strong skill set, but obviously I'm rooting for Jillian. She's right there. And when we talked about age, you know, Jillian came up in the UFC, so we've seen all these lumps and bruises that she had to take in order to get where she is now. But now she's pushing 30, and this is her prime, and she recognizes that. Now she's more mature. She's able to handle life better, and now is her time to go on a run to become champion. And she likes to fight too, so that should carry over. She likes to fight and smoke weed, so hopefully she can attract an audience that likes fighting and smoking weed, and maybe inject some life into the division in itself. But yeah, I had this
at eight. Yeah, I mean, I don't feel as bad about it. I think this division has some potential. It's not amazing right now, but you know, all the stuff we said about bigger women, maybe, you know, strawweight, like a or at bantamweight, strawweights are maybe more conducive to like your traditional women's body size. So you're just naturally more fighters in there that and flyweight. So yeah, I don't feel as bad about the future of that division as I do, you know, heavyweight or whatever. I think it'll be fine. It's just kind of on one of its cycles. So that's
where we have that. I'm gonna say one more thing about this strawweight division. Is it because of their size, and it's I think that size of women are the most crafty in terms of like the things that they can do. So I also think that, you know, once they get it together, once they settle in and once they realize that they can have power, knock each other out, right? Because we haven't seen that a lot. But once they realize that that's a possibility, you know, I think their jiu-jitsu is a little bit better because they're craftier. I think that it can be the strongest division because they move fast and they crafty, and they all have good guards, and I think that it could be a very strong division. I just think they just need to realize their opportunities and what their power is.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. So okay, that does it. So that was my nine there. Who did you have at nine? Because you skipped to eight.
Yeah, 125 female.
25. Okay. Yeah, women's I gave it a little more love, but let's talk about it now.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with that division currently because of I just think, you know, I think Valentina Shevchenko is top three women of all time in terms of fighting. You know, she's up there. It's like Amanda, Valentina, and Cyborg, right? Like, to me, those are the consensus, and she's up there with the best of them. It's just that it doesn't seem like she has much interest in carrying that division. Right. And standing on the forefront of that division and being like, and just being that role model and carrying that division. And she seems a bit reclusive in that aspect. And because of that, she doesn't fight in a way where she's going to take a lot of damage, which is good for her health, but it's terrible for the sport. It's great for her, terrible for us, but it just doesn't really do a lot for the sport. So, she just, to me, she's not carrying the division, you know? So And then that division is just a big drop off after her. A huge drop off after her. And I don't know if anyone can carry. The only person I think that'll be able to carry it, if they were champ and be like, all right, y'all, let's go. I'm going to be really violent and carry this division, you know, is maybe Macy Barber.
Yeah. So I had that down in my notes as well. I don't feel as bad. We'll get to where I have it ranked in a few spots here, but I gave it a little more points because Valentina Shevchenko is so amazing. She's at least like a known name. And again, having someone as legendary as her just elevates the weight class a little bit, but more so for me too, like, you look at this top five, and I know I mentioned that average age between all of them. This one brings it down. You got Macy Barber at 27, Erin Blanchfield at 26, Natalia Silva at 29, Manon Fiorot is 35, occupying the number one spot there. But like, I don't feel too bad about that, having those three there, and they'll be hanging out for a few years here and at least give Valentina Shevchenko fresh challenges. And that's, I guess, my storyline to watch in this division for the next bit. Like, can Valentina Shevchenko hold off this new guard? If she was able to defend that title against like Natalia Silva, Erin Blanchfield, Macy Barber, that brings her legacy. She's going to be threatening Amanda, I think, is like, you know, the true legacy of the top female fighter ever. So that's my take on that. She's holding that down. But again, it's all, there's not a ton of like super big fights there. Like, these will just be co-main events on a number card. There's never going to be any consideration about making this headline its own show. So
that's just, yeah. And that's unfortunate too, because you would like a man like Alex Pereira, it almost doesn't matter who he fights. He'll headline, you know, mm-hmm. because he's, yep. and he, he's and he just stylistically put, not just his division, but he put the UFC on his back. Stylistically, put the UFC on his back, right? And that's not easy to do. And it's unfair for me to ask a fighter like Valentina to do that. But if she did, then the division would be stronger, I think.
Yeah, I don't feel too bad. I think this is the healthiest women's weight class in the UFC. So at least we can give it that credit. And I think we both said as much by having them ranked where they are. So
yeah,
that says that. Okay, you had that at your eight. I will reveal my eight now. Light heavyweight for me at number eight. Man, Alex Pereira is the aforementioned Alex Pereira holding this division up on his back. It is rough without him. Average age of this weight class, 34.7 years old. I believe the oldest in the UFC. Just tough times here, man. And Alex beating a lot of these guys at the top has created what it is. We've seen a lot of these fights already, but you know, big fights to make, not a ton of options. I had Pereira versus John Jones at 205. I don't think we're getting John Jones, let alone at 205, but maybe that'd be a pipe dream. Like a trilogy between Pereira and Ankalaev, I guess, is the biggest thing, like story-wise. But yeah, I guess my big storyline question right now is like, is Alex Pereira even going to stay in this division? And if he leaves and goes to heavyweight, who takes over for him is going to hold this thing up? Because it's grim in his wake.
Yeah, 205 is an interesting weight class. It is extremely top heavy.
Yes.
No depth. Zero depth. But at the top, there are some fun fights. Right at the top, they not headliners, but just like really potentially bloodbath type fights. When you're talking about Khalil Roundtree and Yuri and Olberg and, you know, so like there are some really fun fights to make. Nothing with implications of like being best in the world, but just a lot of fun fights to make it. So like that gives it to me a little bit of credit.
For sure. We'll see where you have it. I assume it's coming up somewhat soon. But yeah, the prospect side of this thing is grim. Who is the upcoming light heavyweights? The only one ranked below 33, not even any guys in the 30 to 33 age range, is 27-year-old Zhang Minyang. and we kind of saw him, you know, have his tough out when he got his big opportunity there. So we'll see if he can improve and grow. But yeah, the rest of these guys, man, it's like Volkan Ozdemir fought for a title almost 10 years ago, and he's still hanging on to like a number eight ranking. So the turnover is just being a little rough here. So
yeah,
I think they got to be hoping Alex Pereira sticks around, but we'll see. Maybe him going, like you said, opens up some new fun fights. You can get you know, Yuri Prochazka versus Carl Zalberg or something like that. But that's what I had at eight. You shared your eight. That was strawweight. So what did you have at seven?
That one, 205.
Light heavyweight. Okay,
light heavyweight, 205. So yeah, so like, and I said my piece on that. Like, it's just really top heavy. There are a lot of fun fights. But even when you talk about going like down the line of guys that are not ranked, it's still fun fight. Like guys like Dustin Jacoby, who just fought last night. They're going to give us some really fun fights, but nothing with implications of title implications or about being about greatness. But a lot of fun fights there.
Do you want to see Pereira stick in this division and just fight the next guy, or do you think we're getting his next fight at heavyweight?
Well, you know what? Like, if he's not fighting John Jones or Tom Aspinall at heavyweight, I would rather him just stay at 205 and fight those guys again. At least they're like,
you don't want Pereira versus Ciryl Gane for an interim belt or something like that if Tom can't fight or a vacant.
I don't even know how much that interests me as opposed to just honestly, Carlos Olberg and Pereira interest me more so than Ciryl Gane.
Yeah.
So after that, I don't know what's next, but Carlos Olberg interests me more than Ciryl Gane. Then after that, I guess he done wiped out everybody who matters, but those guys can fight each other and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll see. All right. That was your seven. What did I have at seven here? I had, as we discussed, women's flyweight. I had my piece on that. I think the healthiest women's weight class. And yeah, I put it ahead of light heavyweight and heavyweight, which is not how I originally opened this. When I was putting that, I think I had at 10. And then the more I looked through, I was like, you know what? Let's give these women their respect. I think this division's actually better and healthier than heavyweight and light heavyweight, but certainly not the appeal, I guess. You know, you put a heavyweight fight or light heavyweight fight, people are expecting a knockout. Not the case with these ladies. So either way, that's where I had it. Okay, we are on to number six. Give me your number six, Gene.
Men's flyweight. Men's flyweight, 125.
We're going to be separate on this one.
Yeah, I got men's flyweight. I mean, and to me, it's tough because now it's like really nitpicking on who's a better division. But I'm going to go men's flyweight here. I think that and just for whatever reason, they lack, and I don't even think it's necessarily in skill, but in terms of notoriety and just name recognition, they lack depth in that. But at the top of it, it's a lot of fun at the top of it. But just the fact that, you know, when you got, you know, even Brandon Moreno, his opponent got hurt, so now he's got to fight Lonnie Kavanaugh. You know, so like the fact that they had to pull in a guy like Lonnie Kavanaugh to headline an event shows a little lack of depth in terms of name value. So I think that's the reason why I have them at number six.
That's fair. I will get to my flyweight rant in a bit, so I'll just sit on that one for a bit, or let you sit on that one. At number six for me, I have middleweight. Solid division. Again, we're getting to the side of the list here where we're speaking more positively than negatively in terms of like separating the distinctions here. But you got Khamzat Chimaev, one of the most interesting characters in the sport. How long can he reign in this weight class? How many guys is he going to go through? That to me is something that's going to hold our interest for a while. The big fights, I don't know if there's a ton screaming at us. I mean, we all expect him to fight Imavov next. That'll just be kind of the Khamzat show, that fight, in terms of the buildup and everything. I do think there's some potential with the winner of Sean Strickland and Fluffy. I think they can do, you know, build a good fight and might be a little bit more tension there and expectations of competitiveness. So I think there's enough going on at middleweight to feel okay about. But again, an aging weight class, some of these guys at the top have been there for a long while. The prospect list is decent but not amazing, and that's kind of my feels on middleweight right now.
No, I think the pro so we're going to, I guess we can fast forward now because I have them next.
You have middleweight at five. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I have middleweight at five. So I think the prospect list at middleweight is pretty strong, actually. Mm. I really do. I think that, you know, Atiba Gautier, like, yeah, sure. He may not have looked the greatest in his last fight, but we still know what he's capable of. And I think that, you know, he saw that fight and his team's going to go back and fix some things. So he's still capable of doing some things. And then what's this, the guy, Mansoor?
Abdul Malik.
He's a strong prospect. I had a conversation with him. I said, man, this guy is serious. He's for real. He's going to really make some noise. And then just, you know, and I spoke on earlier, I'm coaching some guys. I'm coaching Joe Pyfer, who's fighting Izzy. So if he can get that win, like, it looks promising. I think the middleweight division is as strong as it's been in a while. I think last year they had a lot of main events, most of the Apex, but still main events nonetheless. So I think that the UFC understands and recognizes the strength of that division. So, you know, I have them, pulling in. Is that my five?
Number five, yeah.
I have them at number five. So,
yeah, no, I don't hate any of those arguments. I think I was very close to putting it there as well. And, yeah, Joe Pyfer, one of two sub-30 ranked middleweights, along with fellow 29-year-old Nassardin Imamov. So, yeah, those guys are kind of crafting their spot as the younger two in the division. Were you surprised when Joe and his team told you they got the call to headline against the great legend Israel Adesanya in Seattle?
Yeah, I did. I didn't expect that so soon. I thought that, you know, I was thinking that they would probably have him against like Bruno Fajeda or at the best, I thought maybe they would give him Marvin Vittori or somebody, but not Izzy, right? I didn't expect Izzy, but that just means that they have faith in him and telling him, hey, listen, either get out there and do work or get to the back of the line, homie. But we're gonna give you the opportunity.
Have you ever coached against Izzy before?
No, never coached against Izzy before. No.
Is that a fun puzzle to try to figure out? I mean, I know he's getting up there in age, a few losses in a row, but he's still the style bender, and he's got.
No, he's still the style bender, and I think he's as dangerous as he's ever been, and I think that he might even be more dangerous now, knowing that he can't lose this one. Like, so he has to prove that to himself, and we know how dangerous he is when he sets his mind to something. He wanted to beat Alex Bejeda, that was his main goal in life, it seemed, at one point. And what did he do? He knocked Alex Bejeda out. So I know how dangerous Izzy is. So it's a fun challenge for me to try to craft together a game plan and to instill that and give my fighter the confidence to go out and use it.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you know, you win this one. There's no turning back in the title picture. You beat Israel Adesanya. You're getting a title shot or a title eliminator or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So. Yeah. And then when we talk about age, you know, Joe Pyfer, you said 29. So, you know, by the time that happens, he'll be 30. And like, to me, that's the magic number. 30 is the magic number in terms of your maturity. So hopefully he can get there.
Yeah. Okay. At five for me, I had featherweight. This is where it started getting pretty hard, but yeah, I mean, a good division. It's solid. I think we're still in like the hangover of Ilya Topuria leaving. I mean, it was so exciting when he was there, just all these potential new fights because Volk had dominated for so long. And, you know, Volk being back up at the top, it's amazing. Like, it's so cool to see what he's done, the back-to-back KOs, rebounding, doing all this stuff. But, like, a little part of you can't just be like, you know, we still saw that happen with Topuria. And I think it just takes a little bit of a hit in terms of perception. But Volkanov, obviously, is a great feel-good story. He's got a chance, if things works out the way he wants to maybe be fighter of the year. If he can beat, you know, the Movsar Evloev, Lerone Murphy winner, and then, you know, maybe a John Silva or something at the tail end of the year, that'd be a great year for him. So let's just see, I guess, the big storyline for me, how long can Volkanovski keep this late career run going? And I do think when it is done, though, the division will be in good hands. There's some decent prospects. As I said, Kevin Vallejos, the 24-year-old. Yusuf Zalal is 29. John Silva's 29. There are some older guys like Josh Emmett, Pitbull, who are in the 40 range, but it seems like they're kind of getting phased out a little bit in terms of like the top five. So I feel pretty good about featherweight. It's just kind of, when will the page finally turn from the Volkanovski era, I guess, is the big thing for me.
Yeah, I had that a little earlier on my list. I can elaborate a little bit more on that, but I'll just say I think that with Volkanovski being the champ and such a great champ that he is, and I spoke on this earlier about Valentina, like putting that unfair pressure on her to carry the division. Volkanovski has 100% done that with this division and carried this division on his shoulder and just welcomed all the challengers and went out there and just made sure that this division was strong and deserves its place in our top five regardless.
And we'll get a little more to that. All right, I did have I think for the first time when I went through my list, like a non-John Jones, Alex Pereira, etc., like non-title fight for a division, I just put down, please make Diego Lopez and Yair Rodriguez. We need to see that fight. That's a good fight to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw the beef at the press conference. They hate each other. Let's go. That makes sense for both of them right now.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Okay, so on to number four, because you revealed your five. Who did you have at four?
At four, I have welterweight, 170 pounds. Ooh, wow. I'm going welterweight there.
What are your reasons for this?
I went welterweight because at number four, you know, that's a really strong division. It's got a lot of history. It, for the most part, I think it's been historically one of the better divisions, dating all the way back to Matt Hume as Matt Hughes as champion. Yeah. You know, Matt Hughes, and then just Tyron Woodley, Robbie Lawler, all these guys just really, again, carrying the UFC, but that's always been the welterweight division. It's been a strong division. Didn't have it higher because I do think my other divisions are a little stronger in terms of depth, but in terms of just historically always being a very reliable division in terms of making good fights and having good fights and just having a good top 10, I think welterweights is always going to be there.
Yeah, incredible top 10, buoyed by, you know, having a champion like Islam Makhachev, the number one pound for pound fighter in the sport. You know, that raises the tide for everyone, just either shooting for that goal or seeing how he can carry out a title reign in this division. So yeah, I love welterweight. I'll talk a little bit more on it in a sec. Sucks Shavkat Rakhmonov is kind of out of this mix a little bit, because having his name in those rankings as well was very exciting to see. And this division is getting old, and I'll get more into that in a sec. I'll talk about some ages. But at four for me, I had bantamweight, which I think some people maybe would have expected to be higher. You know, great weight class. What can we say? I think Merab Dvalishvili hurt it a little bit with his dominance. It felt like it was going to be hot potato for that with that belt for a while, but you know, his reign is over. What can Piotr Jan do? But all these guys are amazing in there. You got Umar Nurmagomedov, a lot of good, interesting prospects too. I mean, we just saw that fight this past weekend between Basharat and Matsumoto. It's like these guys aren't even ranked yet.
Yeah.
So like, this division is always going to be healthy, always going to deliver good fights. And you got options there. You got Jan Dvalishvili 3 for a big fight. You got Jan versus Umar Nurmagomedov at some point, potentially. Merab versus Umar 2. Sean O'Malley versus any of the above are noteworthy fights. So this division is in a good spot. Curious to see if Merab can get that belt back and just kind of hit unpause on what he was doing, or is, you know, his time at 35 years old, did we see his prime run and his championship peak there? So that's bantamweight for me. Great weight class. I thought I was going to have it higher when I started this, and I ended up dropping it a few spots.
Well, I did have it higher for, and I'll elaborate on that when I get to it, but I'll just say good choice for you, actually. I mean, listen, we're talking top four now, so it's really hard to say anything bad about that.
Who'd you have at, or wait, did you hit on my
three? I didn't hit my three.
Let's go to my three first, because you already said this. Mm-hmm. I had flyweight at three.
Okay.
I really like this division. I think it's an amazing story that I think we both have it where we even do on our list, considering the UFC was trying to axe this division and fade it out completely not that long ago, just a few short years ago. So the fact it is turned into what it has, I think amazing fighters in this division. One of the younger ones, you got the youngest champion in the UFC and Joshua Ban running things. And just rich of storylines. Pantoja's return. Who's the champion? Is it Van, who took his belt somewhat unjustly? Is it his teammate, Kyoji Horiguchi, who could get the belt in the interim? You know, Tatsuro Taira is out there. Multiple potential options for the first Japanese UFC champion here. So I really like this weight class. The fights are pretty consistent in terms of quality, some good prospects, and yeah, I just wanted to give Flyweight its shine because really remarkable that it's in my top three given where it's been. And I do think that the ceiling for this is only getting higher.
Yeah, that Flyweight division, I had it later on. Again, you know, at this point we're nitpicking, but I had it later on. But in terms of top being top heavy, the storylines being top heavy are so strong, are extremely strong. And the only reason why I didn't have their division higher is because the depth of the storylines is not that strong. Like at the bottom, like, you know, outside of the top 10, it's not real strong. But when you talk about top 10 guys or top five guys, like it's as you're as curious as to who's the best as in any other division, like between Manel Kopp, and when you talk Manel Kopp and, you know, Joshua Van, like those fights are so intriguing to think about. Tota Taida, Kyoji, those fights are so intriguing, and the storylines are cool too, because Kyoji Horiguchi already has a win over Manel Kopp, and then if you have Kyoji fight Tota Taida for a title, like two Japanese guys in this mix, like it's the storylines in this division are as healthy, as strong, and as intriguing as any division in the UFC.
Agreed. No, love it. We'll say it over and over. Amazing that it's reached this point. And all credit to, you know, McMaynard and all those dudes for building it into what it's been here. Okay, so at three, what did you have?
I had Featherweight at three. And I put Featherweight at three because of the depth of the potential violence outside of like top 10 guys. When you talk about Vallejos and Steve Garcia and these guys, like I just thought that those guys have so, there's so much health outside of the top 10 that they're eventually going to get into the top 10, and this division is going to be strong for a while. The only reason why I don't think that, well, the reason why I didn't have it even, I couldn't really have it much higher, but it just, when you think about Volkanovski, who he fights next, you know, whether it's, and those guys are great, Movsar and Lerone Murphy, undefeated, great fighters. It's just, they're not extremely interesting. That's the only reason why I couldn't put this a little higher. It's just they're not extremely interesting to the fans. So
are you on team John Silva cut the line, or do you feel
no,
like
we need to I'm not, right I'm not. I think we've done it already. I think we've allowed that to happen already. You know, we let Diego get that shot and cut the line for, you know, entertainment reasons. Now we got to reel it back in now and go, all right, who's most deserving? We got to reel it back in now.
Yeah, we said that, and a lot of people reiterated it, what you said too, like about why Diego got that shot, strong start on Paramount, all that stuff. Do you feel like that goal was accomplished? I personally, I was a little bit disappointed with that fight.
Yeah, it didn't work. It didn't work out the way we thought it would. We thought Diego would really bring it a little more, and he didn't really bring it as much as we thought he would. So it didn't work out. It didn't work out quite like we thought it would, but it was still worth the gamble. It was, if not that, then I thought that Lerone Murphy should have got the shot, and he might have brought it a little more.
I agree. So, honestly,
it didn't work out like we thought, but still worth the gamble.
Yeah, you said on the show you thought that was a no-win situation for Volkanovski. Now that we're on the other side of it, he got the win. Like, did you see value in that? Did he get something out of that performance in your eyes? Or the fact that he beat Diego twice, does that not make you feel any different than you felt after he beat him?
It's weird. I said he was in a no-win situation, but he won me over.
There you go.
He did. He won me over. Like him winning at 37 and making it look a little easier this time, and the way he conducted himself and carried himself afterwards, he won me over. And while I thought it was a no-win situation, he found a way to make it a win.
Yep.
He found a way.
Okay, so that was your three. Let's hit on my two, since you covered that. At number two, I had welterweight. That was, again, it was a tough choice between these two. I think what hit it a little bit in my mind was the age of this division, average age 33.6. But, like, you know, it's tough, man. MVP 38, Daniel Rodriguez 39, Colby Covington 37, Jeff Neal 35, Gilbert Burns 39, Joaquin Buckley, basically the youngest guy there at 31, Kamaru Usman 38, Bilal Muhammad 37. You do get a little more love when you get in the top there. Michael Morales 26, Ian Machado Gary 29, Jack Del Ma- or 28, Jack Del Maddalena 29. So I think there's some good things to be said there. A lot of potential awesome fights. I mean, give me any combination of the top six It's phenomenal. And like I said, I'm a big Islam Makhachev supporter and his greatness. And if he can get through some of these dudes and extend that winning streak to 17 all-time record, 18, 19, God forbid someone wins 20 UFC fights in a row, which I thought may never happen. Like, we're dealing with a special guy in a special division here. So only good things to say at welterweight. Lots of interesting guys coming up too. Great weight class, maybe, you know, not the best in the UFC, but pretty damn close on my list.
Yeah, it's a damn good weight class. Like I said, I was with Tyron during his run at welterweight. Yeah. And it was weird because, like, at that time, it was, there were still, like, a lot of specialists in that weight class that were able to still dominate, you know, Tyron fighting Damian Maya and then Wonder Boy. But, I mean, it's kind of averaged itself out and balanced itself out now, but still a strong weight class and historically one of the better weight classes in the UFC since the beginning.
What are you thinking we're going to get for Islam's first title defense? The Kamaru Usman thing is being there, but I'm hearing Ian Garry. I think it's going to be Ian Machado Garry.
Really? That'll be interesting. But I would have thought that they would have went with Kamaru Usman. Just because on paper, it's an easier sell. On paper. But Ian Garry, it's unfair. But Ian Garry does it. He whatever you give him, he'll put it on his back. You know what I'm saying? It's unfair we ask these fighters to do certain things at times, but Ian Garry embraces that. So if they give it to Ian, I'm not gonna be mad at that. Like, cause I know he's gonna run with it. I know he's gonna do the media. I know he's gonna talk the trash he has to, and he's gonna embrace the opportunity. So I won't be mad at that, but I also thought that they would have just given it to Kamaru Usman.
I thought so too. I had heard they're maybe talking about Usman and Shavkat, and Shavkat's injury kind of wiped that off the table. So I don't know what the plans are going to be, but yeah, again, not reporting anything as fact here, but I think it's maybe trending that way. I would not be surprised. And again, Usman's the layup, but is Dagestan versus Ireland 2 or 3 or whatever we want to call it? That
pretty good sale. Like
a pretty good promotional sale too. I mean, I don't know how much Conor McGregor is going to do to pump that up, but you know, Habib will be there with Islam, and Ian Garry will lean all the way into it. So I don't know, it feels like they have something there. I'm just, in terms of the fight, I don't know how that plays out. Do you think Ian, you know, does he have someone for Islam in that potential fight?
Oh man, I don't know, it's tough. I mean, Islam just looks to be getting better and better, and he just has a way to nullify guys and then sting them. You know, he's, you know, it's, he puts you in his, he's like a spider, he puts you in his little web. You can't get out, and he just stings you over and over again. So he's going to be tough to beat, even for a guy like Ian Machado Garry. But, you know, Ian does possess some threats, man. Like, he's hard to corral. Like, he's got great footwork. And so that's one thing that he has that Jack didn't have, like, the ability to just move side to side laterally in a way where you can't really track him. So he's going to have to use that effectively, but it's going to be tough for him. Yeah. But I didn't even consider the whole Ireland Dagestan thing, but that's fun.
Yeah, I think it'll feel big by the time we get there. So we'll see.
Yeah.
If it gets done, we'll see. Not reporting anything is fact here. Okay, Dean, who'd you have at number two?
Bantamweight. I had number two at bantamweight. I had to go at bantamweights at number two because they're always so fun. These little guys, they run around and they're so scrappy. And then when we talk about depth, I don't know if there is a deeper division in terms of, like, talent wise, who could, like, you could take top 20 guys and bring them into top 10 and they'd be competitive. And okay, when you're talking about like guys like Peyton Talbot on the way up, and like you said, Basharat, like these guys, Elijah Smith, these guys are so fun. They're so good. And they're coming up that depth speaks volumes of that division. And that's why they're my number two.
Yeah, it's a great weight class. What did you think of Mario Bautista's performance this past weekend? Obviously, a lot of hype about Vinicius Oliveira, but he said, get out of here. He swatted that big time.
Man, he looked great, man. He looked great from beginning to end. He looked smooth. His transitions were amazing. I think the loss to Umar really allowed him to give himself permission to be as good as he wants to be. And I think that sometimes when you lose like that, you actually win. I think the loss to Umar allowed him to say, hey, I'm right there with these guys. Let me get back on track. And this was a great win for him against a really dangerous guy. And for him to go out there and dominate him and finish Vinicius Oliveira, man, I'm putting Mario Bautista on my bingo card.
Let's go. He'd love to hear that. No, he's, again, one of these guys has to do work a little harder than the others to get where he needs to be in terms of, you know, winning the fights and all that stuff. But he's done well for himself, and we'll see what he can do. I like the Corey Sandhagen call out. We'll see if they end up doing that rematch. But okay, Dean, I think we're ready to close it out here. And if my calculations are correct, we are in lockstep on our number one weight class in our power ranking.
This was so easy.
The number UFC one lightweight division is the top dog currently on both Dean Thomas and my list. Dean, I'll give you the floor. Give us a nice soliloquy on why lightweight is so amazing here in February.
This was an obvious answer. I don't know if anyone in the world would disagree. If you are a UFC fan, just think about this. The top three most prestigious belts right now are at lightweight. Think about it. The lightweight title. Ilia Topuria. Then we got the interim title with Justin Gaethje, and the reason why they made that's the fight that Paramount wanted, and then the BMF belt. Like, you think about the top three belts in the UFC right now are all held by lightweights. It's a no brainer that the lightweight division is the strongest division. The depth is always strong, so you can even take top 15 guys, bring them in. That's always strong. The storylines are the strongest, and just the biggest fights you can make in the UFC are held by lightweights. It's a no-brainer.
Yep, I think that is very accurate. I couldn't have said it better, and so much going on here. I mean, obviously, Ilia Topuria's future, is that belt going to headline the White House? We have the BMF title fight coming up in the next numbered event between Holloway and Oliveira. Armin Sarukian is out there. There's a lot to chew on, a lot to enjoy, and average age of this division in the top 16 there, 32.9. So getting a little older, that's mostly, you know, because of Michael Chandler at 39 and Moicano at 36. But some younger guys there, Manuel Torres seems to be very legit. Faraz Ziam, legit. Mauricio Rufi proving to be legit. So there's some guys there, but this has always been a division where it's historically the hardest to overtake that top five. And these guys have held serve. I mean, Dustin Poirier did against BSD. Justin Gaethje's done it a few times here. So it's getting good here, man. And I don't know what out of those things I said, the BMF title fight, Ilia versus Gaethje, what about this amazing division has you most hooked right now that you're looking forward to?
So think about this. We just said all this, right? These different things, all these guys, even the depth of it, even going back and how good those guys are that aren't even ranked. And we didn't even mention the biggest star in MMA is a lightweight, Conor McGregor.
At the end of the day,
Conor is a lightweight.
Okay. He's a lightweight who fights at welterweight. We'll see that.
Who did Conor fight at welterweight? He fought another lightweight.
Yeah, Nate Diaz, yeah.
Nate Diaz is a lightweight. Nate Diaz was a career lightweight. Let's make no mistake about that. He brought Nate up to welterweight because they didn't want to cut weight. But Nate Diaz is a career lightweight. Conor McGregor is a career lightweight. Like, he, just because he fights at a heavier weight class, because he's powerful enough to demand that, we can't give him credit for being a welterweight.
That's his true division.
Yeah,
Conor McGregor. Performance against Eddie Alvarez, but go on. What about Conor?
Yeah, it's just, he's the biggest star in the sport, and he's the lightweight. So, like, even though we're talking about the merit of everything we talked about, the biggest storyline and the biggest star in the sport is also a lightweight, to just add more credence to what we're talking about.
Is he in the sport, though? This is my question. We're coming up on 5 years. Yeah. You know, we talk about John Jones 6 years. We're almost 5 years in the summer. It'll be, you know, 5 years by, if he does fight on the White House card. But is he going to fight on the White House card? I mean, he said my contract with the UFC is essentially void with pay-per-view gone. I mean, I don't think it's void, but obviously he's going to have to sign something new under this new structure if he were to fight. Dana White kind of blowing it off a little bit. There's something weird in the air here. There was all that stuff about Michael Chandler not getting the fight. Like, I don't know. Do you think they're going to be able to get someone done here where Conor fights at the White House, where, again, there's no gate, there's going to be no sponsors, there's no pay-per-views. So, like, all these things you could do to historically, you know, pay Conor what he wants are not available to them at this event.
I think if the opportunity arises for them to make a deal with Conor, I think they make it happen. I think that it's, you know, fighting at the White House is going to be a once in a lifetime thing, most likely. I can't imagine them doing this again or becoming a regular thing. And I think if Conor, again, like the same reason with John Jones, like if you have the opportunity to fight at the White House,
sure,
you do it. You take advantage of that. And I think that if the opportunity does arise, I'm leaning toward they make it happen with Conor one way or another. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how that is. And I'm sure Conor, and while I say this, I'm sure Conor's not going to fight it lightweight. Like he's not going to fight it lightweight, but
fight a lightweight at welterweight, I think probably.
Yeah, he'll fight a lightweight, but at a different weight class. But what I'm saying is that he's still a career lightweight. In our eyes, he'll always be a lightweight because of what he's done at lightweight. But him fighting at the White House, if I had to put money on it today, I'd say they make it happen.
And who do should he fight?
You'll never convince me that he shouldn't fight anybody other than Michael Chandler.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the most winnable fight.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but just Michael Chandler is my friend.
Michael Chandler's my friend.
And what he did in the last 3 years to just hold on to this fight, man, don't strip my man of the fight, man. Give it to Michael Chandler. Don't strip him of it. He deserves this.
Yeah. Please. Okay. Let's talk about some actual more relevant stuff at lightweight before we end this. Early lean on Ilya and Justin Gaethje. I mean, everyone's already putting Justin Gaethje in the grave here. Is there anything you can do to make this a real fight?
It's going to be tough just stylistically. Stylistically, it doesn't bode well for Justin Gaethje. I mean, Justin Gaethje's always had a little trouble with better punchers, better boxers. Like historically, if you look at his career, Eddie Alvarez outboxed him. Dustin Poirier, the first time, he outboxed him. And Ilya is the cleanest boxer of all them. And Justin's not younger than he was before. So it'll be tough for him. But we've seen stranger things happen in this game. It's an uphill battle for Justin Gaethje to beat Ilya Topuria, but I'm not going to put him in the grave as of yet. But I'm sure that the betting lines will be very skewed one way.
Yeah, I've been cage side for enough Justin Gaethje fights over the past, 8 years. Like, that man can pull anyone into a fight, and once he pulls you into his type of fight, all bets are off. He can beat anyone. He can land something crazy. He can compromise you. So if Ilya stays disciplined and fights technical, tough night for Justin, but if he can get him into his type of fight, I think there's an opportunity there. Where does this all leave Armin Sarukian? What are we going to do here? I've said it needs to be Armin Sarukian versus Benoit St. Denis next. It makes perfect sense. It lines up. The call out was there. It's a new guy for him. It's a stay busy fight. It makes too much sense. Or are you thinking someone else?
No, that's the perfect. I thought of that too. I thought, you know, Benoit St. Denis, the only reason why I don't want the fight to happen is because, like, Benoit St. Denis's last three fights, I picked against him, and he made me eat my words in his last three fights. But it's so hard. Like, if he were to fight Armin Sarukian, how would I pick Benoit St. Denis in that fight? Like, how could – so, like, that's why I don't want him to fight, because, like, I'm going to have to pick against him again after him making me eat my words three
times.
That's
the way it goes sometimes. So if he wins that one, then you never pick against him again until he loses.
I would never pick against him again. And I said that the last three times. Oh, I'm not picking against him.
Yeah. Then he fights Ilya next, and you're like, what the hell?
What am I going to do? But I think that that's a great fight for both guys, and it makes sense for Armin. I think that Armin – you know, he's just in a really tough spot. Honestly, he just found himself in a tough spot with the ecosystem of the MMA universe swirling around him and him not being able to insert himself in it. It's almost like, you know, when you he about to try to jump into double dutch and he just can't get in yet. Like, I can't get in yet. It's just moving. I can't get in yet. But he's got to stay patient. He's still young. He's got to stay patient and not get upset and not start blaming people and pointing fingers, because that never works. It never works out in your favor. Just stay patient and just wait your time.
Yeah. He seems to be doing that. You know, he apologized directly to Dana White and Hunter Campbell on Daniel Cormier's podcast. He's out there keeping active with wrestling matches and doing every podcast on the face of the earth, except this one, I guess, but I also didn't invite him on. So we'll see. We'll get Armin there someday. I'm talking about the big, big platforms. I'm just joking, but yeah, no, he's killing it. He's doing everything right. And, again, fight Benoit St. Denis on whatever date, whatever card they ask you to, wherever it may be on earth. If they can make that happen, you're in a great spot for the winner of Topuria and Gaethje. But if I was him, should he be scared of a Max Holloway win over Charles Oliveira? Do you think like that they might move him ahead in the title queue in front of Sarukian?
That would be bad for him. But the good news is with Armin Sarukian is that he's a really good fighter that doesn't take a lot of punishment. And he's got a style that promotes not a lot of punishment in fights. So even if that were to happen, man, all right, I'll fight Benoit St. Denis, try to get out unscathed, see if I can't finish him, which he's capable of, I believe. And then maybe get another guy, see if he can't finish him and not take a lot of punishment. As long as he's not taking a lot of punishment, he can beat these guys and not take punishment and just wait his time out. Eventually, they got to give him a shot eventually if he keeps winning.
I know. We hope so. Okay, last lightweight storyline, I think, Paddy Pimblett. He is still, you know, a guy. He took a tough loss there, showed a lot of heart and durability, maybe not as much skill as some people are hoping to see. But if you had to bet, like, does that performance make you feel better or worse about Paddy's future? Is there a day we're going to be sitting here being like, Paddy Pimblett beat a top five lightweight in their prime? Can he be that good?
I was impressed with Paddy's durability and his conditioning. You know, I don't know why people were so shocked at Paddy's game plan. Like, how else did he ever fight before? You know, sure. When you think about it, how else did he ever fight? Like, okay, so when he fought Michael Chandler down, he took him down in the third round after he was already hurt. But the only other times they were on the ground in that fight against Michael Chandler was when Chandler took him down.
Right.
And he swept them in reversed positions. So it's not like Paddy Pimblett has always fought with this crazy style where he's like stunting on you on his feet, where he's outboxing guys and on the feet and then he's taking them down. Like, Paddy Pimblett fights the way Paddy Pimblett fights, man. He's a survivalist, man. He survives like onslaughts. He gets taken down. He's great off of his back. He's never been like the best boxer. He hits pretty hard and he runs forward kind of recklessly. But I wasn't surprised with the way he fought Gaethje or was like disappointed at his skill set. Like, that's the skill set that I know he had. I was more so surprised and impressed with his chin and his durability and his, you know, how determined he was to win that fight despite being a bit outskilled.
Yeah, I just don't know how far that gets you. And especially, he just released a video blog like of him literally eating like six rolls of candy in the locker room before the fight, Dean, and he's vaping throughout fight week. So I don't know. He's got some stuff to figure out, but there's some talent there. The ambition is there. But again, just to go back to the root of my question, and nothing wrong if your ceiling is being like the eighth best lightweight in the world. That is a career that some would only dream of. But if I'm looking at these fights ahead of him in the rankings, would I pick Paddy Pimblett to beat Benoit St. Denis right now? Probably not. Holloway? No. Charles Oliveira? No. Armin Sarukian? No. Justin Gaethje? We just saw it. No. Ilya Topuria? No. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to beat it. He's not going to beat any. Like, I don't see him beating any of them guys. I didn't see him beating any of them guys before this fight. I don't see him beating any of them guys after the fight, even though I was impressed with his determination to win and his durability. I was impressed with that. But again, his ceiling is his ceiling, and he's still going to be a fun guy. He's still going to be a fun guy to watch fight. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you match him up and give him a lot of fun fights, man, he's going to carry Liverpool on his back, man. He's going to carry the UK on his back. And I love that about him. And I still think he's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun matchups for him. Will he be UFC champion? Highly doubt that. Unless I see something different. But it's a discipline issue. Like, he's got to go back to the drawing board and figure those things out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Him versus Dan Hooker is a layup of a matchup if I ever saw it. So we'll see if UFC actually does that. But again, not trying to be harsh on Paddy. He is, I think, a big part of the reason why this is number one on both of our lists. So you have to at least give him that credit. He is a big piece of this weight class, which we unanimously decided as number one here, Dean. Before I let you go, any parting thoughts on this division or anything else?
Well, I think, you know, I would love to see him versus Dan Hooker. I think he beats Dan Hooker, and I think it'd be a great bounce back fight for him. Dan Hooker seems to be on his way out, so let's give him that layup, give it to Paddy. Let's get Paddy, get that love. So I would love to see that. And I'm just so happy that the lightweights have really been able to shine.
Another division the UFC tried to cut at one point, or did cut. did cut.
I was a part of the cut. That's my last parting words here is that we did the tournament. Myself, BJ Penn, Kyle Uno, and Matt Serra were a part of the tournament, and they cut the division after Kyle Uno and BJ Penn went to a draw. They cut the division. I was out of work for some time and didn't get back till the Ultimate Fighter season 4. But they cut the lightweight, said we couldn't sell. Now look at us. I'm on this show with Mike Bond talk about how great the lightweight division is in the UFC.
Maybe that's what the heavyweights need is the threat of unemployment to get this division jump started.
No, that's what they need to do. They need to cut the division for about a year and a half so that these guys can get it together.
Oh, man. Well, that's our first annual UFC weight class power rankings here. Dean, I'd be curious to revisit this, 6 months, next year. We'll do this again at some point and we'll reflect and see if anything changes here. But I think overall, things are in a pretty good place going into this year. I mean, you got to rank it somehow. There's a number of divisions that need a lot of work, but more good than bad, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, when we talk about those divisions at the end, they need work, but somebody has to be at the end. They can't all be top five. Somebody's got to be at the end. And, it just so happens that there's the correlation to that, but it could. I think it can happen. Again, they thought the lightweight division couldn't sell either. So, whatever we need to do to bring those divisions to life, put them on a respirator, give them some CPR. We need to do that.
Agreed, Dean. We'll see if things change by the next time we do this. Now you got a very busy few weeks coming up too. So appreciate you making the time, Dean. This has been great, and yeah, I really appreciate that. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you to Dean for all his time there. That was a wide-ranging conversation and interesting to see how our rankings there compared. Who do you think had the better list? Who had a more correct at the top, at the bottom, all that different stuff. Very much appreciate everyone's feedback, and I try to respond to every comment no matter what platform you guys are addressing it on. So I very much appreciate that, the engagement, the feedback, as I said earlier. Share it with a friend. Let's get this, conversation going here on a UFC off week where there's plenty to discuss. So as I said in the beginning of the show, no fights this weekend, but we'll have all sorts of content coverage over on MMA Junkie. This may be the last show actually you see me do if you are a video viewer from this setup in the process of moving with my wife here. So it is going to be a busy time this coming week, perfect time to have no fights for the UFC going on. So we will be very busy with that, but wanted to bring you guys a show beforehand, get you through this week. So hope you all enjoy. And until next time, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.